My name is Michael McCusker. Anyone listening must be aware that we are scrotum deep in our 30th anniversary summer pledge drive here at KMUN. So it's time to pony up a pledge, transfusion infusion, pass the cash flash. We need your fish skins, your precious metals, your digital swag to pump through KMUN's life wires. And you all know what to do. You've been through the drill many times before in the past 30 years. It's a trade-off. You call in your pledges, which makes you, in a collective sense, a station plankholder. Your pledge is your vote for what you like to hear. The aural range of useful and beneficial choices is immense. Radio's death is continually prophesized, like with zines and newspapers, as you just heard. And my newspaper that I printed for almost 30 years was sort of a casualty of exactly that. Yet today, community public radio is strong and viral, despite virulent attempts to kill it. Remember the difference between commercial and public radio. Commercial radio's single purpose is to grossly inflate the bottom line. Public radio scrounges cash so it can stay on the air. So call in now and pledge for quality community radio, KMUN, Radio Free Columbia Pacific. And while you are telepathing your pledge, I have a few things to say about why public media is essential to the American way of life. It's something I wrote. I call it Radio Free Columbia Pacific. And I guess must make the disclaimer that this is my opinion and my opinion only in all of the cosmos and universes, universi. And I should say that what you just heard previously was The Bridge, which is now on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9. So, let's get on with it. Something I wrote, I call it Radio Free Columbia Pacific. We live at present in an age of intellectual reversion, of savage descent to public ignorance and intolerance, which are generally extant, but not always given the forum or respect of recent years. We pay serious, almost morbid attention to the pathological pieties and simplifications of religious zealots, racial supremacists, and far-right ideologues who act at the extreme edge of our anxieties and reduce the public dialogue to a medieval level. Underneath the meanness and bellicosity that signify our political and cultural regression is a plea to slow down the lunge of technological disruption, a refusal of the nihilistic vision of the future that the popular culture viscerally and noisily embraces. The feeling is that the culture has moved off the track of its history, that it moves too quickly for anything to have much significance. The majority careen along as if nothing will stick to them or be affected by them. Seers of government and business patronize us with fabled visions of increasing affluence and certain virtually painless solutions to deadly problems caused by predatory government and business. Political rights or liberties hard won by one generation are usually eroded by apathetic successors who take them for granted without realizing how rare and necessary they are. Calculated fears of enemies, foreign and domestic, lead to abrogation of civil rights. Dialogue succumbs to what is safe to say or think. Demagogues thrive in bleak atmospheres of fear and despair. Without the cooperation of the populations they arouse and repress, they would have no power. The crisis of democracy might well be more momentous and more prolonged than the so-called war on terrorism precipitated by 9/11. Civil liberties are dramatically threatened while average citizens are rendered impotent. Most Americans and their communities have been undeservedly ravaged by economic disaster and affected every day by its consequences. Millions of jobs are liquidated. Equal numbers of homes are foreclosed, while necessary social services are purged because tax money is directed toward egregious wars and bailing out perpetrators of the financial debacle. The dismal hypocrisy is what is generally referred to as socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor. The public treasury is being exhausted to maintain not only the vast wealth of those who have shattered the family finances of a majority of Americans, but to also subsidize further criminal financial behavior that will lead to more economic disaster, as well as greater inequality of wealth and political rights. The great contradiction lies with the rights, liberties, and equities of the haves and have-nots. The assumption is that the haves will have more at the expense of the have-nots, that the takeover of constitutional government by a powerful minority that from the very beginning of the republic has insisted that liberty is the property of the wealthy elite and that the rest of the population must be made to serve its interests. These newly reconstructed Federalists share a constrained interpretation of the Constitution. Its rights and privilege belong to the wealthy and propertied, its dues and obligations to everyone else. The nation and its citizens are plugging rapturously into an electronically digitalized superhighway of infotainment that proposes infinite possibilities and no few dark prophecies. Government and the newly consolidated mediocrities desire control of the worldwide computer internet that until recently was used primarily by rural traffic, scientists, nerds, and lovelorn. Power in the new world corporate capitalist order is shifting to control and manipulation of the immense flow of information, which is a vital resource but is distorted into a neo-Orwellian system of indoctrination, propaganda, and sensationalism. The information highway is plastic, fluid, and still unpredictable despite corporate and government invasion of its bandwidth and cyberspaces. But the pervasive ambitions of monopoly are felt and reverberate through electronic and print networks. Corporate concentration of media ownership is ominous and significant cause for public paranoia. Huge media conglomerates control and manipulate information that is increasingly vital for the survival of personal and public freedoms while simultaneously fabricating self-serving mediocrity. The persistent efforts by government and powerful elites to control public dialogue, particularly in matters of political influence and social behavior, have always been dangerous and usually the guise for authoritarian usurpation of the apparatus of communication. Realization of this led directly to the First Amendment, which states clearly and simply that neither government nor anyone else has the right to deny or interfere with freedoms of speech, press or religion, or with public gatherings, and also guarantees redress of wrongs. If anyone took stock of the contemporary use of press and speech freedoms, it should confirm the worst cynicisms about the tastes of the greater mass of people, most of whom acquiesce to banal, violent, and sexually exploitive entertainment, addicted to spectacle and blatantly commercial rituals conjured by shameless media promoters who appeal to base and witless instincts for no loftier purpose than to sell a product to make a buck. The question of media's purpose is intentionally vague and generalized to plumb the various definitions, opinions, and effects it has on contemporary American society. Is it the watchdog of freedom or the lapdog of the national security state? Is it the stenographer of power? Is it fair and impartial or biased and coercive? Is it fatally corrupted by media consolidation and profit? Is trash journalism all we can expect in the future from the media? The answers are varied and critical, but the collective verdict is ambiguous. If media does not rule public opinion entirely, it yet seems the most pervasive, controversial, and disquieting influence on the American public. We might instead listen to quieter voices we hear over the uproar, friendly voices that guarantee hard times ahead and warn us that we need each other to get there from here. KMUN is a quieter voice. The small independent media in America and throughout the world provides a necessary forum for the exchange, analysis, understanding, and arguments that are the basis of any culture or society. Their goals are in miniature, the same as are debated everywhere on earth, to assist in the eradication of sexism, racism, poverty, war, and integral to all of these, abolishing inequity and inequality, as well as to document the dooms and glooms, the perversities and horrors, rarely its triumphs, of our busy, ill-tempered species. Without an independent media, broadcasting information is hardly more than a useful method of misleading the public, of providing illusions and deceits to thwart and atrophy personal and collective values and liberties. An important assumption of democracy is that the flow of information should not be restricted or tampered with. But of course, interfering with and manipulating information is a high priority of political and corporate power that accurately assumes the general populace will not give much thought or greatly resist mind control efforts most of the time. People who listen to independent radio stations like KMUN and its sister station KBOO, KBOO, in Portland, wish for more than babble shrieking from their radios, and viewers of public broadcasting search for more than the drivel beamed to the masses by commercial networks. Yet intimidation by the FCC, the gestating ministry of truth that Orwell predicted would rise to be the temple of the state, suppresses creativity and controversy. Risk-taking, essential to creativity and independence, shrivels to mumbles of acquiescence. We should remember Orwell. He invented a language, Newspeak, which was based on erasing unwanted ideas in the pretense of simplifying the public dialogue. He warned that what is removed from language is forgotten in the individual and collective mind. Orwell was wrong, though, when he suggested that a propaganda system depended upon violent coercion. Instead, in a post-Orwellian world, we suffer the benign control of a powerful system of indoctrination and propaganda that needs little coercion to set an agenda for what people will think about. Small independent public radio stations such as KMUN are often in opposition to bland or autocratic rules and standards. On the other hand, controversy, flirtation with original ideas, or any other form of political or cultural experimentation is generally anathema to commercial megamedia, which consolidates immense technologies to hype the salacious, mendacious, and indigestible. KMUN struggles mightily to survive in this era of media titans. It is one of a very few radio and even fewer television stations obsessed with a vision of unaffected by commerce. After all, commercial media prints and broadcasts to make a buck. Public media chases a buck to print or broadcast. KMUN is descended from radical newspapers and radio stations that blossomed briefly in the 1950s and 1960s, but its lineage threads back to the prickly press that fostered the First Amendment and Oregon's later even more stringent guarantee of press and broadcast freedoms, Article 1, Section 8 of the state constitution. No law shall be passed restraining the free expression of opinion or restricting the right to speak, write, or print freely on any subject whatever, but every person shall be responsible for the abuse of this right. KMUN had its 30th birthday, April 17th. During those years, the world far and near has proceeded with its usual human melodrama of wretchedness, poverty, squalor, ignorance, needless tragedy, injustice, and wanton slaughter, and here and there a few laughs. The mainframe of human life remains essentially as it has been for millennia, despite recent influxes of a parallel virtual digital reality. Lean and hungry, purposely void of the sources of wealth and funding that spread the diseased creed of consumer consumption through mainstream commercial media, KMUN might be considered a forum for impractical, perhaps paleolithical dreams of a less grim future prophesied by millennial myths and terrors, a beacon for an equally ancient concept of personal and collective freedom and equality, in history only a dream, but its most persistent dream. Mouses must roar after all and bite at the ankles of ponderous tyrannies if we are to keep our heads and humor. Micromedia, flamboyant, irreverent, raffish, and Raggedy Ann is on the march through the 21st century. And that is something I wrote. And, you know, sometimes I hear people refer to KMUN as that hippie station, but I usually counter that they are probably blindly addicted to commercial radio's vapid mediocrity, whose perpetrators should shamefully hide their faces from the very people they treat as mindless, or more aptly, their identifiable voices, except they all sound the same. I love the concept of public radio and the Androclean courage it inspires in the corporate lion's den of insatiably insensible commodity commercial radio. And I am very proud to broadcast my heresy on KMUN. And I've not seen the light of the phone ringing since I sat down here at this microphone. So are you finally going to fire me by not pledging for my program? Well, let's go on from here. Today is Lee Miller's birthday. He lives in Astoria and used to contribute quite often to the North Coast Times Eagle, a radical rag I once upon a time published, and maybe a forerunner of the zines. And I thought one of his articles was appropriate for today's pledge drive, A Conservative Betrayed by Lee or Leslie Miller. I was raised in a very conservative family. The values I was taught are a far cry from what is being practiced by the Republican Party today. They are not in observance of traditional philosophy, but appear to be extreme in their ideology. The difference between a philosopher and an ideologue is that a philosopher may believe in conservatism, but is willing to listen to divergent thoughts and change his or her mind if an argument answers an apparent need. An ideologue operates from a fixed viewpoint, and all the answers are listed in a predetermined book. If the problem is not in that book, it simply does not exist. There is no argument and no dialogue. If you bring up something outside of the accepted party line, you are stereotyped and belittled. You are either with us or against us. The Founding Fathers were deists, not Christian fundamentalists. They believed in a higher power, but that each person has the right to choose what that higher power is. The Establishment Clause in the Constitution prohibits the creation of a state religion. Church and state are to be kept separate in order to guarantee this most personal of freedoms. Benjamin Franklin said that a people who are willing to sacrifice liberty for the sake of security deserve neither. George Washington warned against the establishment of a large standing army and to beware of foreign entanglements. Dwight D. Eisenhower more recently warned about an emerging military-industrial congressional complex. I add the word congressional, as was part of the president's original draft of his farewell address. These are all traditional conservative thoughts. These statements apply to today's world just as well. True conservatives believe that government is like a council fire where all views are listened to. This demands dialogue. Each person has the right and obligation to express opinion and dissent about government programs and policies, especially when lives are at risk. The loyal opposition's viewpoint is to be listened to and respected in order to make informed decisions and to avoid alienation of the minority. Small government is better than a large bureaucratic establishment. Each person has the right to vote and is to be treated equally under the law. These rights are not to be diminished. A person may not be arrested, nor may his or her property or vehicle be searched or seized without a warrant sworn before an impartial judge. We have the right to do anything we wish in the privacy of our own homes, as long as we cause no harm to others. The Constitution was created for the benefit of all human beings, and these rights do not necessarily accrue only to U.S. citizens. All people aspire to these values, however little they may be practiced by foreign governments. To the extent that government exists, it is for the protection of the individual rights of all. Diplomacy and trade are less expensive and more productive and practical than fighting, regardless of how much patience and time it takes to obtain an agreement or treaty. It is not our policy to attack first, but if someone starts a war with us, we are likely to finish it. Only Congress has the power to declare and fund war, as in the First and Second World Wars, the last legal wars that were formally declared rather than made by congressional resolution. The president is extremely limited in using military force, except for sending rescue missions of short duration to save people's lives at sea or abroad. The Constitution may be amended only by a two-thirds majority of Congress. The judicial, legislative, and executive branches of government were created in order to balance the application of power. The constitutional framework is intended to keep each branch in check. The founders wanted to keep tyranny from taking control of any one of these divisions. Their world was full of dictators with their own armies, empires, state churches, and whose every whim was law. they wished for our country to avoid that fate. The 14th and 15th Amendments were to guarantee that each person has a vote that counts as much as any other and that all people are equal under the law. The rights of the individual exceed those of institutions such as the state, church, corporation, or any other bureaucracy. Local government exceeds the state, and the state exceeds the federal in authority. At the risk of repetition, to the extent that government exists, its primary reason is to preserve individual rights above everything else. A balanced budget is one of the ultimate goals of conservatism. Both military and social programs are to be equally limited. This thriftiness is not supposed to be limited to the bottom line, but always saving resources for the future. If a natural resource is totally exhausted, it is no longer of benefit to anyone. These ideologues who call themselves conservatives seem unwilling to conserve anything, including the national treasury. I applauded Ronald Reagan's promise to strip down government, but now these false Republicans have inflicted the greatest deficit in U.S. history, not at all conservative. We are signatory to the Geneva Conventions, and we should treat prisoners accordingly, whether they signed on to the program or not. The issue is about what we are as Americans, not about how inhumane our enemies are. If we torture or treat our prisoners harshly, we are no better than they are. The Japanese military during the Second World War were not signatory to the conventions, and they treated our soldiers in a barbaric and despicable manner. However, we treated them with kindness once they were captured. That made all the difference between us, and it is something to be proud of as Americans. It is a practical consideration as well. A person being tortured will tell his captor anything he wants to hear just to get the pain to stop. This makes for poor intelligence, which cannot be applied to the war, so torture cannot be rationalized to obtain information. Interrogators who spoke to Japanese prisoners in their language understood their culture, were generous and kind to them, and received quality intelligence that was accurate and applicable. The Geneva Conventions are not so complicated as to make it hard to get information. If one of the goals of conservatism is to get big government off the little person's back, then it has failed miserably. The military and law enforcement agencies have become bloated while social programs have been cut remorselessly. Our government has become bigger and worse. I love my country, but my government scares me. The founders debated long and hard about a standing army because its existence tempts politicians and generals to start an empire and perform a military coup d'etat. Presently, the threat of terrorism is being used to corrupt the Constitution. We are exhorted to sacrifice our privacy for the sake of security. These are the domestic enemies our founders warned us about. These neoconservatives contend we are a Christian nation, implying that there is no difference between public policies and their fundamentalist dogma. The war on terrorism is a good example. It might as well be called a war on dandruff for all the term describes. In the lexicon, terrorist is a buzzword for an extreme Muslim fundamentalist who is willing to commit suicide with a bomb and murder innocent victims simultaneously. It follows that since the bomber has no respect for human life, he has no rights as a human being. Therefore, he should be hunted down and killed like a mad dog. We carpet bomb and launch smart bombs which can kill indiscriminately, so in a sense we are no better than they are. It seems that our extremists are feeding their extremists by the same rationale. People of more moderate thought inside the three faiths outnumber the extremists within the Jewish, Christian, and Islamic traditions. A handful of hardliners within each seem to drive and control the rest. The demagogues in each group seem to be why the Middle East is such a source of heartbreak and violence to the whole world. It appears they are bound to take the rest of us into the apocalypse against all odds. Rather than a council fire, government has become a pyre to burn anyone who dissents. As conservative as I have been stereotyped and dismissed as a liberal simply because I disagree. Dialogue is not desired. There can be no loyal opposition. There is only one way to do things, and the answer isn't in the party dogma. If the answer is not in the party dogma, there is nothing else. Decisions are made without listening to facts and divergent opinions. Poor decisions are the predictable outcome. People are now being arrested and taken to jail without a warrant, vehicles searched and impounded, depending upon an officer's suspicions. The police and prison systems have grown to monstrous proportions. There is no control of defense spending. This big bad government at its worst. After fighting the totalitarian state of Russia for over 50 years, it seems our government has become more like that of our Cold War foe. Our courts depend on the appointment of impartial judges. Presidents appoint ideologues. One person's vote does not count the same as another's when a recount is stopped and when we use touchscreen voting machines that do not provide a paper trail or can be corrupted with a computer program to fix an election. How about weapons contractors that do not have to bid for contracts, have no field tests of weapons systems, have no limit on spending, and have no quota or deadline? During World War II, politicians and contractors that bilked the taxpayer like this were heavily fined and sent to prison. That Bush and Cheney were not impeached, censured, or tried for crimes lends credence to the thought that Democrats are gutless wonders. Terrorism is claimed to be a new kind of war with a new kind of enemy, which justifies extremism in the application of extraordinary force in policies both here and abroad. That is a fallacy. We have fought the Barbary pirates with their kidnapping, forced slavery, ransom, and murder. We fought the Japanese in Wuhan in spite of their suicidal tactics and inhumane acts. To commit murder or suicide, a person has to be convinced that the world is such a horrible place that life isn't worth living and brainwashed into thinking violence will improve it. This war is not just a war of military action, but a war of ideas. Nothing is being said and done to win the hearts or minds of the Muslim world. Why would it benefit Iran to embrace more moderate thinking? We can destroy the Taliban's weapons and we can kill their bodies, but we can't destroy an idea. Unless we come up with better ideas, we are bound to lose. We are losing now. We might run out of corpses before they do. As the emerging nations develop, albeit crude, versions of our weapons of mass destruction, I fear that the next genocide will include our species. After Vietnam, the politicians promised we would never send our forces into combat without a plan to get in, achieve the objective, and get out. Never again would we get bogged down in a quagmire for years or decades. My hopes for the future consist of two wishes. Everyone agrees that something is broken. I wish for a candidate, whether Republican, Democrat, or Independent, who can describe what's wrong and offer a plan to fix it. I am tired of voting for the lesser of two evils, or as LaDonna Harris, vice presidential candidate for the People's Party in 1976, called it, the evil of two lessers. Unfortunately, it takes huge amounts of corporate contributions to run for office. The corporations contribute to both parties. Whoever's elected owes more to the special interests than to their voting constituents. Big businesses make their profits because the political system is compromised. I suspect the necessary reforms are unlikely in the near future. Nonetheless, the power of the corporations and their paid lobbyists must be curtailed, or our republic will remain at risk. I hope that honest conservatives might revolt against the neos and reform the Republican Party from within. Until then, I will remain a conservative betrayed. And that was A Conservative Betrayed by Lee Miller, who was a frequent contributor to the North Coast Times-Eagle. And this is an excerpt of an article that was published in the October 2006 issue. Well, that's more or less my show. I realize that you pledged to support KMUN, and we effusively thank you every pledge drive. It's almost a ritual act, but this seems to treat listeners as donors, like you just pumped a quart of blood, which metaphorically you have. But in truth, you are more than simply donating to a worthy cause. You are partners of KMUN, members of a collective cause who pay dues like in unions and opera societies. You realize the process of public media is that we are all in this together. And a lot of you have been on this side of the microphone at one time or another, either as a programmer or pitching a cause or an event. I remember Joanne Rideout saying that it seemed as if half the population of this stormy coast has volunteered at KMUN or its affiliates, either as programmers or for the millions of other tasks that need doing around the station. So, of course, you deserve our gratitude, and we are obliged to thank you, but not as abstract donors to a charity, but as brothers and sisters who are as much a part of KMUN as whoever is culturally a mouth of the Columbia. You've been listening to A Story Told. I'm Michael McCusker.